You're listening to Fakeologist's Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio. Hi, everybody. It's Thursday, July 27th, the year of our Lord 2017. No, I haven't gone religious, but I just like to say these things. Okay, I'm in the live stream. I'm just about to bring in my favorite Florida ecologist, and his name is Horace Value. Horace Value, welcome to the live stream.
Howdy,
Ab. I noticed you have a couple of Discord profiles, neither of which have been verified. So will you be using this login going forward? Or?
Yeah, since we're on a tech talk, I'll tell you that in searching for loopback, one of the things that people have done is set up an alternate profile. So I have the Farce underscore value that I can connect with, like before a chat, to test audio to make sure everything's working.
Oh.
So that's why I set that one up.
Oh, I see. I think I've had one guy set up about 20, but I didn't know exactly. I know the software is probably prompting him to do it and he's confused. He had 20 under the same name over the year or last half year. So you have a backup just so you can see if, check the sound. Loopback is a sound engineer's technology talk for testing.
Right. Some, like Skype has that, you know, test your audio setting. So usually when I'm going to dial someone with Skype, I just call the test call just to make sure my mic is working and everything. I can hear it okay. So when we were going to connect last night, I set up that alternate channel so I could call into that to make sure that all my settings were right.
All right, bear with me. Anytime you see that I mute, you know I can't talk. I try and mute when I can't talk. Being the day.
How much of this can we expect during our little chat, do you suppose? Predict?
Try not to make predictions in the I'm not in the predictions business.
You're no prognosticator.
The reason I brought you on, one of my favorite fakeologists from Florida, FFF, I wanted to get some audio advice because I think you're involved in the audio business. Is that correct?
To a degree, yeah. I do audio and video, and it's more event-oriented. We record a lot of stuff, and there's some production and post stuff involved.
Oh, good, because I wanted to know what kind of equipment. I wanted to do just some in-person interviews, and I wanted to have good equipment that helps and doesn't hinder. I was looking at a portable recorder. This is all information I got off various websites. Portable recorder or what kind of microphone. I like the wireless because people get entangled in their wires sometimes. I was looking for what do you call a mic that is on a stick? A stick mic?
Yeah, some people refer them to stick, handheld, whatever it would be.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a wireless handheld mic. And, of course, everything has to be on Amazon.ca for me to buy it. I can't deal with anyone else.
You can't do eBay. You can't do
eBay. No, I can. I just prefer, if I can get it on Amazon, I do it. They're my merchant of choice. I just don't like the nonsense of shipping and arguing about money.
Yeah, sure.
And as much as I get kooky about corporatism, you cannot beat Amazon for buying, the frictionless buying and selling.
I'm not familiar particularly with the level of selection of pro quality stuff on Amazon. I noticed the Zoom was on there, and that's a good piece. And they probably have the Shure mics, too.
Yeah, I don't really think I have to be too pro, but I'm taking your advice. If I can get a used professional piece of equipment instead of a, then I could do that, too.
In terms of the wireless, if it were me, and you know, it just depends on your budget and what the level of know, fail safe. Wireless is going to be the trickiest thing that you're going to experience. And what the problem with wireless, if you go to the cheaper models, is that you're going to get radio interference. Signal's going to cut out. Things are going to step on your frequencies and that sort of thing. That's what you have to look out for.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. That wouldn't be good.
No, that would ruin your setup. So the thing is, if you're doing interviews where you're seated, there's really no need for the wireless. If you're doing man on the street type stuff and you want to hold a mic in front of somebody's face or whatever, then yeah, the wireless is probably better for that, or if people are up and walking around. But if you're just sitting across a table from somebody, I don't really know that you would have to have wireless.
I agree. Other than the fact that what if they're sitting in an easy chair, for instance, they want to sit back and talk.
Yeah, you can still manage that with a wired lav. That's pretty common, okay. I think, in broadcast studios and stuff. You know, the host and whatnot, they sit down at a desk and they get all strapped in with an in-ear monitor and a wired lav. A lot of cases, you know, probably the interview shows when they're walking onto the stage are going to have wireless because there's not going to be an opportunity for them to get sit down and have somebody come put wires on them and stuff.
But I get it.
If you're in a situation where you have the opportunity to get your wireless lavs or wired lav hooked up, you know, there's like maybe a unit that'll attach to your belt and a wire that goes up to the lapel, and you're just going to be sitting there talking. That's probably it's you could almost compare it to the difference between wired and wireless internet connection, you know, in terms of connectivity. As far as if you want something to be solid, wired is going to be best, but the wireless is pretty solid once you get into the Shure and Sennheiser levels. They're like, you know, what's $500-$600 a channel.
Okay, that's big bucks. That's more than I wanted to spend. You were showing that you can get it used.
Yeah, it looks like eBay has them for maybe some 200 and change to 300 and change for a channel of wireless, depending on, you know, what's available. You have to look and see what's out there. I would probably do that. And the reason I'm saying this, I work with a lot of event companies, and they use these Shure wireless. So they buy them for $600 a channel, and they rent them anywhere from $75 to $150 a day. And they're out every day, like 300 days a year, 8 hours a day, for years, and without ever failing. Hundreds of them I've seen over the years, and maybe I've seen a problem with one or two. It's a specific kind of problem, and they get dropped, and they get thrown on trucks, and it's just like, you know, they're really solid. So if you're in that business, you can't afford to have stuff crapping out on you in the middle of a show. So you go ahead and spend the money because you know you're going to make it back in a few rentals.
Oh, I see. I get you. Is there a good wireless handheld mic that you'd recommend? Are we still talking Shure?
Yeah, they're the same, yeah. We usually get them in combo kits, so you have a lav and a handheld with one receiver.
So you can do either or.
I always think of them in terms of channels, like how many channels of wireless you're going to have, and the channel's either going to be a lav or a handheld.
Okay. The wireless, I could plug in the receiver into a camera, or I could plug it into a mixer or a recording device, right? Like a laptop or a portable recorder?
Right. That, like the Zoom that you saw, has XLR inputs in it, so you can be fine for that. Or you can get an interface for a laptop, which those are pretty inexpensive now. I got a little, actually, that's what I'm using right now to talk to you, is a little Behringer thing I picked up on sale for like $50.
Did you put a link to that in the email you sent me?
No, I got it. I can't even remember where I bought it. Last year was around Christmas time, and someone put a link on my Facebook page or whatever. And it's like a special for $49 for a two-channel USB preamp. So I just grabbed it. I didn't take it out of the box for a long time, but...
And what is that? It's some kind of adapter?
It's an analog to digital converter, so it takes a mic board or signal, and then it turns it into USB, so you can plug it into a laptop or a computer. And so there's two channels of that. So It's, you know, like you could have that with a laptop, and that could be your recording setup.
I wonder if the N40 could double down and do that duty too.
What, the Zoom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, well, I don't know why you would need it to do that. I mean, I don't know if you're planning on recording, like, that's why I was asking, do you have a laptop? Do you use a laptop at all? So, I mean, maybe we should talk a little bit about the purpose, right? What's the end goal that you're looking to, like, project from start to finish? What does it look like?
Yeah. Well, I want to be able to do in-person interviews mainly, and possibly man on the street interviews.
Yeah, so the Zoom is going to be really good for that. So, because I think it's probably battery powered. You might can even wear it on your belt. So
yeah,
having a laptop with another piece, and then the wireless is going to be for that. Like that little Sennheiser setup that I showed you with the two cubes. But they actually, let me see if I can find a link.
Yeah, on Amazon.
B&H is really good though. They have good prices for pro level stuff.
Yeah, but they might not ship to Canada.
God, I'd be really surprised if they wouldn't.
Well, they might, but they might charge too much for that. But I'll look at it. So is B&H the main store that you like, online store? For that kind
well, of? For pro level stuff and bargains, I think they're pretty good. You know,
okay.
It's just they have a selection of production gear that Amazon's not going to have. And they don't carry any, you know, housewares and knickknacks and what, you know, the type of things. And Amazon kind of carries a little bit of everything, but B&H is focused on the production. It's all pro video and audio and lighting, photography, stuff like that. And so you'll find probably a larger selection at B&H for that type of thing.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that Amazon is not going to have it. But so, yeah, I drop a link in here.
All right. Are you putting it in the live stream chat?
Yeah. So what you see that little cube?
Let me look. Looks like Yosarian joined us.
It's a new name. Hey, I kind of wanted to, I was looking, I haven't been to Discord in a while, but I wanted to congratulate you on the sort of unification you're doing here on the Fakeologist site. There's a lot of people from different groups that are kind of registered. And
oh, is that right? Thank you. Well, they're from outside of.
Clues people, you got Hoaxbusters, you got John LeBon from Down Under, and like, you know, different types of people are kind of coming here to mingle, which is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, I see what you sent. You call those little receivers boxes.
Yeah, so here there's like one of them is a receiver, which would go into your Zoom, but this little cube thing, you can plug that into the end of a microphone, and then that'll turn a regular, like a Shure 58 into a transmitter. And they also make a receiver in that little cube format, too, which you could plug into your Zoom. So, like a lot of ENG, electronic news gathering, like, you know, the man on the street, they use these little cubes. It's really handy for, you know, sometimes a news crew will show up at our event and come to our mixer and, hey, can I pop this in your Zen channel and you can give us a feed for the camera? Then they, you know, throw one in
that
the camera.
That rectangular structure with is that an XLR female on it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. You call that a cube.
So okay. It's plug-on transmitter, they call it. So then that turns your microphone into a transmitter. Then they have another one in the other direction, which would plug into your Zoom, right?
Okay.
And that's, you know, for like the man on the street stuff, that would be super handy because you could, you know, carry it all in your pocket, or even like a fanny pack maybe or something, you know, like it didn't take up much room.
Oh, I get it. That's really pricey though. So I should try and find one of those used.
You might find one, and then there, you know, stuff too. There may be other manufacturers. I know there are. I mean, there's people, EV, and there's Electrosonics, which is even pricier still, but they're, I just know that I've seen people show up, even with the lower model Shure stuff, at events where they're 20 feet from, you know, of space between the transmitter and the receiver, and they just have all kind of problems with dropouts and interference and stuff.
But not with Sennheiser. Heiser.
Or the Shure either. Yeah. And so the thing about these, I think the whole system will run on batteries for the, like the Shure, the ULX that I was talking, that I sent you the link to, that's going to be, the receiver's going to have to be plugged in to a power source. That's going to limit your, you know. Of course, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a small cable that you just hold in your hand and stick a mic in front of somebody on the street and have it cabled. I mean, that's saving you $700.
Right. Okay. And you could just get a cabled mic to go
If you were doing a man on the street, you could have like are you familiar with the SM58?
No, what's that?
It's just like industry standard, and they have these on Amazon. It's like the go-to handheld microphone of the industry, right? I'll drop that in here, too.
Yeah, please.
And so that's like, yeah, these things, they're $100, and they've been $100 forever. And they just...
Oh, okay.
So you have one of these with a, like a short cable, maybe a 6-foot cable or something. You get a loop in your hand, you got your Zoom on your belt. You could even make a little flag for it, right? It says Fakeologist. So you stick
it. Oh, yeah, you call those flags, yeah.
Does
it have a little thing to stick the... how do you get one of those flags?
There's probably companies that make them, I think. Some people, like the news people, show up with them and stuff. And I've had some clients that they want us to make them and bring them along if they're filming and stuff. You know, and they kind of make their own sometimes. I'm sure there's kind of little ones. There's even a company, MikeFlags.com.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And then you can, you know, you put your logo on it. And then you just go back and forth. You know, you stick it in front of the guy and say, hey, what do you think about this? And then you put the mic in front of him. He talks for a little bit. And then you bring it back to you and say, well, what do you think about that? And then you just do the whole thing back and forth with one mic. That's like, it's a $300 system right there. Two pieces and a cable.
You have to put a sock on those things. Can you put a wind sock on that?
You could. I mean, yeah, if you're really windy, the 58 has a built-in windscreen and it's dynamic, so it's already, you know, halfway there unless you're in a really windy environment. But you see people using those outdoors all the time.
Also, mesh is a windscreen?
Yeah, there is foam underneath that.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah, okay. It's pretty good about rejecting wind.
So you need a wind. You need a cable for that. I'd need an XLR cable.
Right.
Okay. And that would be female to male or male to female?
Yeah, female to male.
Okay. You always say it in order of direction of the mic, I guess, the sound.
I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest. When you say XLR cable, it generally refers to both genders. Otherwise, it's going to be a problem.
Thank God transhumanism hasn't hit the audio industry yet. That would really screw things up. I'll have one of these cables that can go this way, that way, six ways to Sunday.
Well,
and
Trump
nothing
would fix
will
it.
Work.
He would fix it for the military, at least. He would insist that there's no transgender cables in the military.
Yeah. Oh, that goes without saying. He's a media specialist. He would never allow that to happen.
I'm just referring to the latest news. I don't know if you...
I got it. I posted that on my blog, egi.fakeologist.com. I do put the odd mainstream EGI stuff on my blog.
That's an area of research that I will not live long enough to develop an interest in.
Well, I don't know. Don't discount it out of hand.
I just, it's, I mean, I, well, yeah, I don't know. If, we're talking tech here today, so let's.
Yeah, this is tech talk. We're not getting into EGI right now. I know you want to. And
well, that is part of tech. Gender is very important in a technology. Things have a direction, and if you don't have your genders right, this is going to be a problem.
You probably have insight into some of these people you interview, I'm sure. I'm sure you see some stuff that we don't see. You see before. The makeup is slathered on.
I'm just referring to cables. You know, male, it's an electronic thing, too, the electricity. So the male end always goes home, back to the transformer, because you don't want to have exposed prongs with power laying out naked in the field somewhere, right? So male is going to go into your transformer, and then on the other end is going to be a female with the rubber coating, right? So you don't accidentally step on that and electrocute yourself.
I was going to say, this is getting somewhat erotic. Only a man must have invented these terms. That's what all the women in the audience are saying right now.
Yeah, I guess. Well, this applies to plumbing too, right? And I'm sure there's probably tons of other things. Yeah, but it's gosh,
now,
man.
What is phantom power? Like, do I need phantom power? Do I need mic power? I don't understand that. It's not well explained anywhere.
So that 58 that I posted, the last link.
Yeah.
That's called a dynamic mic, and it doesn't require phantom power. And
okay.
Why
not?
It's just the way that the element is constructed. This is going to get a little bit above my head, but there's condensers in the mics that aren't dynamic. What are they? Electret or some other field. I can't recall some of the terminology to describe the ones that require power. There's a voltage on either side of a polarity that makes magnetic tone or whatever the coil resonate. It requires power.
Yeah, the coil.
Pick that up. So, mic, you're just it's the vibration of the sound wave is causing the vibration. It doesn't require power to do that. So,
and what's better?
It depends, I guess, on typically the dynamic mics are more directionally focused. So like on the Shure, if you're holding the mic with your hand, that side of the mic pointed to your hand is rejecting everything toward your hand. It's not going to hear anything that's behind it. It's going to have a little bit more limited capacity to hear, so you're going to put it right in front of your mouth and speak pretty close to it, and it's going to only pick up that that direction.
So that has some advantages then.
Yeah, especially in a live environment when you don't want to be picking up ambient noises and off-axis things and stuff that are going to interfere, and wind and that type of thing. Now, like, it doesn't have the clarity and detail of the condensers, which that's what they use in studios, and you're going to get a much better, clearer and crisper sound out of those. But at the same time, when somebody starts a car a block away, you can hear it through those mics, unless you're in a really controlled environment.
Do condensers need power, phantom power?
Yeah, the condensers need phantom power.
Okay. Trade-off, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say if you're looking to do the man on the street stuff and that, dynamic is going to be the way to go for that.
Okay.
The lavs are condensers. They're, they sit on a lapel, so they need a more wider range of area to pick up the sound. So, they're going to, the pattern of sound absorption is going to be more broad. They're not holding them right in front of your mouth. And like you probably see that from time to time, that people lose their lav, it'll fall off of their body, and they'll pick it up and hold it in front of their mouth. And
they'll blow it out.
Yeah, they blow it out. It gets all crazy, distorted, and it sounds horrible.
Yes.
So, but at the same time, the lavs are harder to control audio-wise as far as limiting sounds that you don't want in them. So they're the kind of thing that you want to use if you're in a more controlled environment.
I got it. How would somebody use the N40 portable recorder, as I've seen this talked about? How would they use it in conjunction with a video camera? How would you sync the audio with the picture? How's that possible?
Well, you could send audio from the camera to the video recorder on one channel or something.
Okay.
And you might.
Could you do that wirelessly?
Well, with the cube type setup or whatever, you could do that. Or most people do it wired. I think, now we're getting kind of into like a film type domain, because all the stuff I do, we record live stuff. So all the video audio is going direct to the video camera from the mixer or whatever. So,
okay.
or if it's, you know, that, so if we're using a recorder that does audio and video, so they're coming in together and they're synced. What people do a lot of the time is they'll, if you know the old theater movies, they have that clapboard with the stripes on it that they click at the beginning of a scene, you know, has a slate on it that tells what.
Oh, they call that clapboard, yeah.
So, yeah, so that clap, that's what they use to sync. So, like, when they see that thing come down and it connects on the video, that's when you should hear the noise at that moment, right? And then your audio is going to be synced with your video. You can do it with a hand clap, too. If you have
I see. So they make a loud noise and they see it on the sound editor.
You have to have a noise that you can see, like somebody clapping their hands together. They clap their hands together, you can see when their hands meet, and that's when you hear the clap. And then you line the audio up with the hand clap on the video, and then you're synced from there on out.
Well, I got it. That's what that was for. That's what the clapboard is for.
It's, yeah, kind of a primitive way to do it by today's standards, but it still works. And it could do it in, you know, anything you can find where this is a real obvious short sound that you can.
So what do you do when you're doing the video edit? You look for when the clap piece makes contact on the editor, and then you drag the audio file to that point.
Right.
Where there's a peak.
Exactly.
Oh, man. I'm going Hollywood. I figured that one out. I always wondered what that was for.
Yeah, it was probably more primitive back then. Channel. They probably had to do it by ear. You know, I don't know if they had a visual representation of waveforms back then.
Yes, yes. This is interesting stuff. I always like talking to smart technical people.
Yeah. Just the tidbits that people pick up time.
All right. If I'm wandering around, you say that I could get an N40, get one of these 58s, and that's all I need, and a cable, and that's all I need.
Yeah, that would be all you would need to do. You know, in the circumstances I'm talking about, with you just holding the mic out to somebody, and you see that all the time. You see somebody in these YouTube videos. I see it. That guy Mark Dice, doesn't he do something kind of like that? He has a wireless, but he just takes a mic and sticks it in front of somebody's face or something. Or, you know, sometimes you can see people shooting their own, like you can see their hand going out in front of it, but you don't see their face because they're just filming their subject, right?
Yeah.
They bring it back and ask a question.
So they have their 58 hooked up to the video camera, and it doesn't need a power source.
Right, right.
Okay. Okay.
Most cameras, and I'm sure the M40, they're all going to send out phantom power. It's not much.
Is it I get you.
4 volts or something. So you.
So the camera sends out the power.
Yeah, it can if you want to, and I'm sure the N40 has phantom in it too. If you want to use other mics besides dynamic mics, it's going to give you that.
Now the 58 uses an XLR connector system.
Yes.
How would that go into a video camera or just a camera? They don't have XLR ports, do they?
It depends on any, prosumer on up, which is not pro, but, you know, pro
prosumer
cameras
is a good word.
They're very expensive, but prosumer cameras from, say, probably $800 on up, they're probably going to have XLR connectors.
Okay.
You can get a cable adapter. A lot of them will have the mini eighth inch adapter for like some kind of little, wired lav that uses that connector, and you can get an adapter cable that'll adapt to XLR down to that, where you can plug it into one of those cameras. But then it's not necessarily the best way to go, but it will work.
And what do most camera mic inputs have? What do you call that connector?
It's like a
little one.
What is it?
A mini?
Eighth inch mini.
I thought it was a 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5 millimeter.
Oh, I see, an eighth of an inch or 3.5. Yeah. Oh, okay. You could get an adapter,
like a headphone, or you know, yeah. I have an adapter. I'll show you this too. This is another possibility that you could use to get even cheaper, and I'm sure Amazon has this. And I had one of these. I was using $20 here for this guy. And the iRig, This is a little, it's adapter that you plug into your cell phone, and then it turns that connector into an XLR. So,
okay.
So you could just go out with your cell phone and have an XLR cable plugged into this guy with your 58 and do. And I bet you'd probably be pretty surprised about the level of quality you could get out of recording done this way.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, very good.
And it's probably, you know, give you several hours of recording time. And then, yeah, just drag it into your computer, whatever, USB. So what are you going to ask these people, Ab?
I don't know. I'm going to ask if they like my... First thing I'll say is, do you like my microphone?
Are they just happy to see you?
Yeah. I want to do some recording for some archival purposes of people I know. I'd like to do some biographies. So that's what I was mainly thinking about. So if I don't use the 58 would have to be held by them. That's why I want them to have a lavalier. But you're saying a wired lavalier is just as good.
As long as they're seated, I would say.
Yeah.
Once they're people start walking around, then that's going to be a problem. So
what do you recommend for? Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. I will tell you that for a long time, the Sony, it's ECN, maybe 77B.
I bought a $20 lavalier mic, and it sounded worse than the mic in my phone.
This thing here, it's probably still like broadcast industry standard, and it's pricey. It's like $264 for one of these guys on B&H. I imagine there's still television studios and stuff around that use these things. I know that Rode is making a
$100 lavalier.
Yeah, and that might be very good. I've never heard one, so I don't know if I would recommend. So it's going to be one of these things. And, well, that's the good thing about Amazon, too. Well, actually,
yep, they'll take it back.
Rode, it looks like they have one for $244, so they're definitely in that space.
Yeah.
But I think they have a cheaper one, too. SmartLav for iPhone, $67. So that thing may be awesome, you know?
That's the other reason why I want to get a recorder. Is because that N40 has four channels.
Okay.
So
yeah.
If somebody is quiet, I can boost their channel later, right? In edit and post, as we say, post.
Right. Yeah. So that's very handy. That.
I don't see if I could do that with a laptop. Because you were mentioning laptops. I'm not sure. I'd still have to have a mixer to bring in two mics.
Right. You'd have to have an interface that converts to USB. And so now the interfaces can, you know, they can be as sophisticated and have as many channels as you're willing to pay for. But as far as convenience, I don't think you're going to beat the Zoom thing for getting out and, you know, having something portable.
And then I can just take the card and throw it in my laptop. So there doesn't seem to be any great advantage to getting any. Or I think maybe it even hooks up to the laptop, the N40.
Yeah, probably. Probably has a USB out. I'm not really that familiar with.
So you've seen N40s out in the field?
Yeah, I've seen, it seems like a lot of production companies now are using those to do audio recording.
They have microphones on them too.
Right, yeah. I understand those are pretty good from what I've heard.
Yeah, you'd have to stick the recorder in someone's face, I guess, because the microphones don't move.
Yeah, I think what I've heard people talking about, referring to good sound quality from those mics in terms of maybe like musical performances and stuff, you know?
Okay.
Having a good quality ambient capture for a band or something. I mean, I'm sure it would work fine in front of somebody's face as well, but there may be less control. Just, I don't know. A lot of the stuff you kind of have to listen to, too. There's another unit, the Marantz. What is it? BM60.
BMB. That's a portable recorder?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little more. It also has a... maybe they might be discontinued. But they were real popular in the field at the time. And it's kind of a similar... But they don't have their own mics, I don't think. So I think the Zoom is probably taking the place of that. Tascam makes one that's very similar to the Zoom, which I've also
seen. Yeah, I was going to mention there's a competition. Is it called
Tascam DR40?
Yeah, that was the one I think I saw. Any comments on that?
No, I have zero personal experience with either of these. I can't tell. I just say that I have seen pro-level touring event companies that are using these to capture audio at meetings. So there must be.
How do you spell that? Tascam?
TASCAM.
Tascam. No. P as in Peter or T as in Toronto?
Tango.
Tascam.
Apple, Sierra, yep. Charlie, Alpha.
Oh, yeah, that's the one I saw. Tascam TR40.
Yeah, they have them at a lot of different price points, too, it looks like.
So you've seen them both?
Yeah. Tascam has a long history of making recording equipment. They were the first one to introduce, like, the cassette four track. They've done reel-to-reels, you know, been around for a long time. Zoom,
really?
Zoom is a little bit new to the space, but I think, as far as I know, they started making, like, guitar effects and stuff. But I wouldn't say that would have anything to do with the quality or functionality of the Zoom stuff. It's also a good quality product, for sure. Actually, it looks like Zoom has a little bit better reviews on Amazon than some of the Tascam stuff.
Oh, I see. Tascam has something where you can hold it and put a muff over it for recording. That's interesting. That's really interesting. So you get the dead cat on it. Okay, that's cool. And then you can have a handheld grip to hook onto the bottom. That's pretty neat. And a power cable. Well, maybe a Tascam is the way to go. Interesting. I'll have to look into that.
Now, is this related to Fakeology work, or is this?
No, it wouldn't be Fakeology, no. It could be. I wanted something multi-purpose there.
Yeah, we're having another sort of folks get together.
Folks buddies.
Next month in Austin again. And I sent a message to SMJ. I haven't heard back from him yet. I hope he responds. I'd really like to sit down with something like this with that guy for about 8 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This might give you ideas. You better bring some equipment and not waste the opportunity.
Yeah. Wow. This Tascam also has this little DR-10L portable studio recorder. It has like a mic built into it. It's like, looks like something somebody just wears and presses, and it records right there on their body to a disc, I guess.
Where? So, where do you see that? You're looking at, which one are you looking at? The 40? DR-40?
DR-10L. No, the DR-10L. I'm sorry. If you look down, like, customers who also bought this item, or they drop it in here. It's kind of an interesting idea. It would be a situation where, I don't know how you... each person would wear one of these things or something, I guess, and then you'd have to sync. If you're doing a question and answer, you have to sync them somehow. But it's kind of an interesting idea, I think. It would be something where they just drop this in their pocket and hit record and start talking, you know? And they wouldn't be any wires. It would be recording directly to the disc that's on them. Then if you were talking...
You call it a disc, but it's a memory card, I think.
Yeah, disc, memory card, and flash...
Channel portable studio recorder.
The only drawback I see to this is like the syncing idea, but, you know.
That's for recording yourself, maybe.
It could be. Or, I mean, you know, it could be like for backup audio. Pop this on.
Oh, I see.
Up in somebody's pocket if they were working on stage and had wireless interference while they're up there. They'd have a copy of this in their pocket that would be, you know, pristine.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
There's so much. It's just like it's overload, you know. I'm just kind of amazed sometimes at the amount of things that get produced and marketed like that. You know, it's kind of a unique little piece. Like, how many people need this and use this? Are they really going to even pay for the development and manufacture of this thing? Maybe.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Well, the fact that they rent out a $800 item tells you they're not a lot of use for it.
Oh, yeah.
People just need it once in a while.
Sure.
I know I could rent it, too. There's places here. They're all downtown, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of advantages renting certain situations.
Oh, sure. So the N40 or the Tasco, do you think 4-channel is more useful, or 2 is enough?
Yeah, that's, you just have to consider, you know, your environment and what you imagine is going to be happening thing. I mean,
if there's only two voices, you should only need two channels, right?
Right. Yeah. As far as the four channel one is in a similar, right? So
it's which?
I'm just wondering if it's in, like, the Tascam was in it. It's basically the same size and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to, that's what I'm asking. I'm not familiar with it. But, yeah, there's going to be maybe a premium. It says four tracks, but maybe two of the tracks might be the internal mics or something. And the other two, so you're not really going to get any more external tracks.
I get it. Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to consider, you know, I guess. I mean,
well, that's why I brought you on the call.
How the environment has a lot to do with it. If, you know, how many people you're going to be talking to at a time, whether you're seated and, you know, and then it's, you know, if you want to have every voice on a separate digital track, that's kind of another story too. Most of the time, the way it's done is, everything just goes in through a mixer and is mixed down to a stereo panel, and everybody goes on that stereo mix. And the post thing, it's like, just look for you to do like the levelator or whatever, leveling program, just to bring everyone up to the same level. There's a lot more control if you can do everyone on an individual track, but then you have to kind of draw the line, like, well, if I have eight people, do I want every voice on an individual track? Then you're kind of in
a lot of editing.
Studio band territory then, you know, you'll have to have a software to mix everything down to stereo, and then you're kind of like in studio recording. And there's like one of the things probably that I'm pretty impressed about the way that Adam and John work their show is that I think the way I understand it, it's once they end it and hit end, it's almost posted immediately, right? They don't really do anything in post for that show. I don't think so. It's like,
yes.
The more you can do, organize things around the way that it's going to end up and get things as close to that beforehand, is because once you start taking things into editing afterward, then it's just like, you know, that it kind of, for me anyway, it sort of starts to lose momentum a little bit, you know.
Oh, I agree.
Okay. So sometimes simpler is better. And then just trying to get everything as close to your finished product as you want while you're doing it. That way, when you wrap it, then you're just that much closer to having it finished and available.
Actually, John's sound is kind of sharp, I noticed. He doesn't use a great microphone. I find there's some tinny aspect to his sound that annoys me.
Yeah, he mentioned it. I think he uses some kind of CAD. And he definitely mentioned... there's this guy, Michael Jolie. I'm not sure, you know, if you've done any research, but he mentioned that name, the JJ mods or whatever. And this guy takes lower end mics and does some, you know, there's some things that can be done. I actually got a really nice mic from a guy that did a mod in California, and it's a lower end mic that he replaces a couple of components and gets these German made pieces and stuff and throws them in there, and it just improves the quality like tremendously. And supposedly he has something like that. And I guess he just likes it. He likes the way it sounds. I'm not crazy about his sound myself. It is a little sharp. And I don't know if that's, it could be just his voice, or it could be a quality of the mic and the voice. But from what I gather from listening to him, that's his preference. He likes his voice sounding that way. So, yeah. I had an experience a while back on eBay. I saw a Neumann U67. Which is a little bit more rare than the 87, and these numbers probably don't mean anything to you, but the new 87 goes for around $3,200. If you get an old one, that can be thousands. The 67 is really rare and can be $10,000 or something. And there was some studio on eBay that said they were selling one for like $1,000. And they mentioned a guy that had repaired it, and I called him. He's in California, and he does those mods too. And he said, hey, bidding on this mic, and I located it. They said you repaired it. Had the name of the studio in Colorado and everything, and said, yeah, I did that. I said, well, it's weird because they're selling it for $1,000. And he's like, no, they can't be doing it. There's wrong. That's something's wrong. I don't know what it is. He's like, that's a scam. And I never heard anything more about it. But yeah, he was totally convinced that there was somebody running some game. I didn't follow up. I hope nobody is out there listening saying, ha ha, I got that mic for $1,000 and it was a $10,000 mic. You fool.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, mics can go, they can go crazy. And there's $15,000 mics out there. I'll never have one. And I understand that Mick Jagger and Bono have both recorded songs that we hear on the radio with SM58s. So go figure. Whatever works.
Whatever, exactly. It's whatever you use. Quality isn't always what counts. It's the fact that you do it.
Yeah, but shipping beats perfection, as they say. And I think I maybe lost to...
So the wired lavalier mics, Rode for $100 might be worth trying.
I would probably give it a shot if it were me, and just see how it sounds. It might be fine. It's, and that's a good thing about Amazon. If you don't like it, box it up, send it back, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And you have a fancy camera now too, right? Are you still there, Ab?
Yep.
We're still experiencing dropouts, I think, or I don't. You bought that Nikon, right?
Yeah, I've got the P900. That's why I was curious if I could use that as well. I want to get something that works with that too, and the N40. That was the idea.
Yeah, I think what you could do with that too is use the ambient mic, the camera, and then if you had somebody with the lav, you could line up the audio that way. You know, just like make the waves match up with the Zoom or whatever external recorder. You just make a match up with the ambient mic on the camera, place the track with that. Anyway, I feel like it's dropping out or something. You're just very quiet.
No, you're on push to talk there. Hold on for it. Yeah, when I go on push to talk, it's I guess push to talk is like a noise gate.
Is that an actual key that you have to push in order to talk?
Yeah, exactly. You can put your Android device on push to talk. Yeah. And I'm trying to use that, but then you got to hold it when you're talking.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Okay, so we've been at it an hour, I guess. All right, so the dead air is a little unsettling for me, I think.
Sorry about that. I'll go off dead air. It's just I'm in a noisy environment.
Well, it's just that the response time is kind of protracted, so I feel like I'm here by myself. And
audio chat, all dead air, is cut out automatically.
Yeah, well, I guess I wasn't thinking in terms of posterity, but I guess it's good that that happens.
Don't worry. The posteriors and the posterities, they're not too worried.
Do you think that you have enough?
I think I've got a lot of information. Oh, I appreciate it. It looks like you're suggesting probably a wired lavalier is a cheaper way to go. And I might want to use the 58 as wireless. So how would I do that?
I think you're probably going to get a better deal if you're going to do that, going with like maybe the Shure ULX on, I would go to eBay and get one of those.
Can you drop a link to that?
Here's one here, 49. I don't know about the cube setup with the, like the Sennheiser. It's probably going to be more by the time
you always need a cube?
If you have like a 58 handheld and you want to turn that into a wireless, then you need to put that little plug-in cube thing in the end of it to make it a transmitter, right? And then on the other end, you're going to need a receiver. And by the time you get those two pieces, you might end up paying more. Like here's a ULX P4. It's still bidding. I don't know. Buy it now. But, it's probably going to be 300. I just might find something for 300. And the Shure is going to be a little cheaper than the Sennheiser. And you're probably going to have a better chance of finding one of those used at a decent price. There's one here on on eBay here for $349. That's probably 100, 600, 700 new. There's a bunch for $349 here, it looks like. And I've been down the road with this wireless stuff a lot of times, and it's just, there's one for $300. But it's bid and 5 days left on that. So, you know, and, you know, I'm sure if you shop on eBay, right, you know, to go to the completed listings and just have a browse and see what the market says about how much people are paying for these things.
Yeah, I haven't been on eBay in a long time, so.
Yeah, so that's, I usually do that. So if I just assure you of completed listings and see if there's entire kits, what they're going for. Yeah, 310, 383, 363, yeah, somewhere around there. So probably somewhere between $300 and $400, 330, there's one. Yeah, So that's probably what, that's going to be the probably about the best deal. There's a ULX Pro bundle, two handhelds and two receivers for $649. These are things that sold recently in the past month or so. Yeah, but the Pro Level Wireless, it's pretty pricey. You know, so it's like I would probably really consider if that how necessary that is, why I went that direction. If you know, depending on your budget and how much you're going to use it.
Yeah, that's probably not. I was just thinking something for maybe a little less professional.
And once again, you could.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Line 6 makes stuff for like, you know, bar bands and stuff, and they have their own line. Anything about them, I've never seen one. Have no. Experience it, that stuff may be good. I couldn't offer an opinion on it. I think it's probably a little bit cheaper. And there are, you know, Shure stuff. And depending on, you know, if you're in a situation you need to, there's Shure, find it. Shure has a frequency, maybe if I do Shure recommended frequencies by city.
Well, if I'm in a room, or within 10 feet, I don't think I have to. Do I have to worry? I think
it just depends. It really depends. You know, I wouldn't. Wireless frequency finder. Let me drop this in here. So go to this link and put in your zip code, probably your city or whatever, and then it'll tell you where you should, you know, what TV stations and whatnot are in that area and where you should set your frequencies, get the best results. And maybe you can look and see if they have one on their maybe prosumer line that operates in that band, and you might have better luck with it. The reason, I just did an event last month where we had a violinist and an aerial opera singer sang from one of those Cirque du Soleil type, you know, suspended hoop things for whatever reason. They both brought their own wireless setups with them,
and, okay,
and 300 to, you know, $500 or whatever they had spent, and neither one of them worked. And they were,
oh wow,
50 feet away tops, more like 20-50. They were just TV stations or whatever, you know. But we're like in a big room where people have cell phones, and
that'd be a huge
radio
problem.
Traffic. And, yeah, so we had to replace them with the ones I'm telling you about, and then they work fine. That's like just that,
okay,
the experience I've had. That it doesn't mean that it's going to happen for you, but if it were something that I was looking to be, like in this situation, there's, you know, it's a live event and it starts at IMAX with hundreds of people there, and it can't fail. You know, you have to have something you know is going to work, or have a really good probability of it working. And so my experience with these systems has been that they work almost every time in every environment with almost zero difficulty. Then when you start getting into the lower end, then you run into problems. But then that's, you know, if you're in a house somewhere and you're far away and there's not a lot of radio traffic where you are, but it, you know, TV stations, they broadcast for 100 miles or whatever. So, you know, once again, it could be something where you could just try it and see. And you may have good luck with it in one location and maybe not so much in the next, you know. But if I were going to spend maybe $250 on a used lower end, on a new one, I'd spend $350 on a used one. If it were, you know, if I were looking at it that way, like I would get a used pro piece for maybe a few dollars more before I would get a new lower end piece. If that makes sense.
I understand. Very interesting.
I'd take the chance on mechanical failure over just a new piece not being able to be up to the demand ever, you know?
So the Shure, what you're showing me, is one such system.
Yeah, that's just one of the ones that you'll find in production companies all over, certainly North America. Some of them may be different. Cell phone companies captured a bunch of frequencies a few years back. So, like, all these rental houses had to change all their microphones because they took over all these frequencies. They had to move to a new band. And they might have shipped a lot of those out to, like, you know, other parts of the world where they don't operate in those same bands. I don't know if they do or not. But otherwise, they're all scrapped. And they might do it again before long, too, which would, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's a lot of frequency jigging around.
Yeah, they might just, so that if these are all operating in like 470 to 900 now, they're up to that, and they might come along and say, we're going to take from 700 to 1200 now, so anything that's above that, you have to replace with something else. Or they might do it on the low end. We're going to take 400 to 600, and sorry. And then all those mics are just scrapped.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yeah, I never thought of that. So another vote for Wired.
Well, it may be a while before that. This happened about 5 years ago, probably. And there was 2 or 3 years of notice prior that they were going to do it. So it may be a while before they need it. And I think there's a lot of progress in the digital space where there's finer divisions and more available. They're compressing it more with digital somehow. So it may not be a problem for a while.
No, that's interesting. All right. Well, you gave me some great food for thought. I really appreciate it. It just shows how that's why it's a profession that you're in. It's not really something you can just get going easily. A little training and experience.
I don't know. You might can. I guess it's just... Now, there may be some luck involved, too, and environment and whatnot, but you know, there's some things that people learn through ordeal by fire as well. So, but these are my two cents for my tooth, and that's awesome.
I appreciate it. And you are dropping out a little bit. I'm not sure if it's your end or my end.
I could be moving away from the mic. I have a gate on my system as well here.
Oh, okay. What does that look like?
It's part of my interface in the software. There's a gate set up that's kind of it opens when I start talking, and I don't know how I have it set right now.
So it's not hardware; it's software. The gate.
Yeah, it's software, but it works with the interface. It's not separate.
What's the name of the software?
It's RME Total Mix. I posted the thing that I use at home, my A to D converter, and it's like, is it 8 channels or 16 channels or something? And it was pretty pricey, and it's nothing you're going to want to haul around for sure.
Why do you need that? So you use that at home for doing your own mixes?
Yeah, I use it for music. Just it's got a real high standard of conversion for instruments and.
Oh, right.
You know,
so you need that for mixing, bringing in music. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, there's a, and you know, that, once again, that's another thing too. I think the one that added a pretty pricey piece is like $1,200 for 2 channels. and his has all that software built in with all the octave and stuff and reverb and things that he uses on the show to do all that stuff in real time. And those... They're like plugins that work with the unit, but it's kind of overkill for most people.
Now that N40 and the Tasco, getting back to them, have you ever used them to hook up to a laptop to get the sound off, or is it just strictly the card that you put in your laptop?
Yeah, I think if I imagine they record to WAV or MP3 files, I'm going to guess, and normally... Well, what we do, we just take the card and stick it in a laptop and drag it into a file.
Okay. They are a recorder. Are they considered a mixer as well? recorder mixer because they take four mics?
I don't know about I'm still a little bit unclear about the four mics. If the two of them are ambient that are built into the unit, a mixer is, I don't know if I'd call it. I mean, you are mixing two mics together, but you wouldn't be able to use it as a mixer per se. You know, like there are recorders that do function as mixers, which you could, to go out to a speaker or something and mix several channels together. But I don't know if I would call the Tascam that, since it's really only two XLRNs.
Okay.
But, I mean, technically you are mixing two channels together, so I guess it's a mixer.
All right. It sounds like if I got an N40, used the 58 wired mic, plugged it in there, the XLR, or got also a lavalier and plugged that in, maybe a Rode for $100, and all wired, that's probably going to get the best sound.
Yeah, and probably the most cost-effective way to do it as well.
I mean, yeah, because actually, when Hoy was here in Toronto, I wanted to record, but I didn't really have a good setup. And if I had a portable recorder, it would have worked a lot better.
Crazy as it is, you might just try experimenting with your cell phone in one of those Rode lavs and see where that goes. Or that little iRig thing I was talking about with the 58. It's a pretty cheap way to go, you know?
Yeah, convert the XLR cable to 8 millimeter, whatever, or 3.5 millimeter, whatever is in the standard phone.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's going to have a completely different sound than trying to record with the mic on your phone or whatever. Or it's going to be a real actual pro quality mic that's being converted. And probably the software in the phone that's doing the wave recording or whatever is probably pretty decent.
Yeah.
So it might be worth just trying that, experimenting with it and seeing what you get out of it.
But most of the wired mics are XLR. Is that the way to go?
It's just so standard. You can find XLR cable anywhere and you can extend it up to 1,000 feet if you need to. It's durable and, you know, it's not going to short out. Probably it's going to take a lot of abuse and the same with the mic. The mic's going to, you'll be able to drop it 100 times. Not that you will, but you can.
Only Neil deGrasse Tyson does mic drops.
With his phony microphone that didn't even have any input plugs in it or whatever. Like a paperweight, but yeah.
Oh, you're sure it wasn't wireless?
I think I looked at it and it looked like it was some kind of prop. It looked like it didn't have anything on it, or it wasn't plugged in, or it was something silly. It was just a prop, if I recall correctly. But yeah, anyway. Why would anything about that guy be real, right?
For sure. He's an actor. So there's going to be a Hoax Buddies meetup in Texas for all interested, or only invitees only.
I guess anybody that can get there during that time, I'm sure we would welcome all takers. Speaking for myself, I don't know.
You'll meet separately if the others don't agree.
Yeah, I'll say that. I'll find that. It was very loose last year. It wasn't particularly organized at all. We managed to spend some time together and hang out. And actually, to be honest, there wasn't a lot of Hoax discussion. We were just kind of met and some food and went and saw some music and just kind of hung out.
What did you talk about? The weather?
I don't know. Probably we wanted to order and where we were going to go next and what the how good the bands were and whatnot. It's like
no shop talk.
Probably talked about the weather. It was hot.
So not a lot of shop talk.
I don't know that there was, that I recall. It's kind of funny. I think the point of it was that, hey, we all exist. We can see each other and match the voices with the names, and we're not shills.
Well, I mean, maybe you should bring a portable recorder when you go and a couple mics, or just use the mic that comes with it. Do a bit of recording just for – that would be good.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that, and then I don't know – yeah, just kind of – kind of never really got any steam behind it. We'll see if, hopefully we'll see SMJ. He actually lives in that area. So,
yeah.
And there's another guy that's not too far away, Sacred Cow Slayer.
Right.
we put out the invite, but he's actually a few hours away, just like around the corner for him. So it would be awesome if he would show up. And I'm sure there's other people in that part of the country. Hoy was talking about trying to make it, but it's still a little bit up in the air for him. He just, I think he got back from a long European trip, so might not quite be ready to travel again.
Yeah, Hoy is always jet setting, it seems.
Yeah, well, I don't get around that much.
So in summary, for an in-person get together, stick with Wired. Recorder's good. The N40's good. The Tasco's good. The Shure, is it the Shure 58 or?
Yeah, Shure 58, industry standard wired dynamic microphone.
And maybe a Rode Lavalier wired.
Right. They're Rode's kind of a newcomer to the scene, makes good quality products, and they're pretty popular. And I have no experience with that mic, but I would say it's definitely worth trying out.
Or the Sony. You put the link to the Sony, but it's pretty pricey.
The Sony's pricey. Now, that's a broadcast standard piece that you're going to find in a lot of television studios and whatnot.
How do they wire it if they're sitting at a desk? So even if you're sitting on a panel at a desk, are they always wired? Usually,
I did some work with the Super Bowl a few years back, and they had a belt pack for their in-ear transmitter, and I believe they had a belt pack for their mics as well, and they would kind of take their place, and most of them were seasoned kind of pros that are used to that talking head environment, and they just go up and clip their stuff in, put their earpieces in, get their belt packs on, button their jackets over it and whatnot, and sit down, and then, you know, that was the way they rolled. It was all wired.
So those are wireless?
No, they were wired.
What's the belt pack for?
The condensers take power, so they have either like a little battery or some sort of or they have to plug the big XLR cable into a converter that converts it down to the smaller cable that the lav goes into. So there's a connection in between, you know.
Okay. Do I need one of those connectors?
No, that comes with, that's part of the lav. That's part of the wired lav.
A wired lav has a little wire, 3.5 millimeter.
It may not be that. It may be there's another, it's like a clip-in connector. But then from there, it's going to convert to the larger XLR cable.
Which you plug into
your Tascam or your Zoom, whatever.
Okay. Oh, I get it. Okay. So that's what they come with. But so do they need power then?
Your Tascam is going to send them power, or the Zoom,
okay,
or whatever. But most of them also have like a space for like a AA battery in there, which will give them power if you're not sending it from your device. But almost all devices now are going to have phantom power option.
Oh, I see. So the Rode Lavalier wired mic will have a place for a AA battery in the line.
I'm guessing. I'm not familiar with it, but I'm going to say probably just as a backup.
A backup. Oh, okay. That's why the crappy lavalier mic I bought didn't work well, because it probably wasn't getting enough power, maybe, or
right,
didn't have any. Phone didn't have enough power or something like that. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, like that little iRig thing that I pointed you to. If you got that for your phone and plugged your 58 into that, then you get a good sound out of that.
Mm-hmm. Why? What's in the iRig? Is there a battery in there?
I don't know if there's a battery. I have one here. Have to pull it out and look, but you know, you're getting the quality of the 58 dynamic mics, what's actually capturing your audio,
okay,
instead of like whatever your little labs, probably not a lot of engineering that went into that little thing, you know, depending on who made it, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. For $20, it's probably not much. Yeah. What do the talking heads have an earpiece for?
So they can hear. Like a producer might be telling them, hey, you have 20 seconds left, or like the thing that Adam always says, get him off. He's cut this conversation. We don't want to hear this anymore. And
right.
Hear, okay. You know, any messages that are coming, or they might hear, they're doing remote. They got to hear what the people are saying on the other end, the location stuff.
Or if they're playing a clip.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been a good tech talk.
Cool.
I think I know way more than I used to about this. So it seems like I'll stay away from the wireless. Doesn't seem to be a great need for it right now. High expense, and I'll just try and find wired stuff on the cheaper. Not too cheap though. I'm not going to cheap out.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at now is definitely, you know, I've seen that in pro setups. So I don't think you're going to go wrong with any of the stuff that you're talking about.
And to your point about smartphones, I've watched some news conferences lately, and they're holding their smartphone up to capture the audio. I thought, boy, that's really.
I'll do a recording with now. This is a kind of a cheaper interface, and I do hear the difference between. I added a couple of channels to my setup with this little Behringer thing, so that the quality of this is less than the real interface. But then I have this is an SM7B, which you probably, it's a pretty standard, like a radio type mic. It's the big black barrel thing with this kind of round, cylindrical, windscreen on it, the big one.
Yeah, I've got the, Audio Technica 2020, by the same idea.
Yeah, so I can make some recordings with this, and then I can I'll make a recording of my cell phone with that iRig with a 58, and I'll send you the WAV files, and you can compare them and see what you think.
Okay,
that might help.
Yeah, whatever you're using now, you've got the best audio quality I've heard of anyone, maybe similar to mine.
Yeah, this is a fairly standard type of radio style setup. I think a lot of people use this mic. I heard that Michael Jackson recorded Thriller with it. I don't know if that's true or not.
I get it.
Anyway.
My audio. Coming through.
All right. Check 1, 2.
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, this Discord has a problem with the Bluetooth when somebody calls. It doesn't get handled right.
Is that what you've been chatting on, is Bluetooth?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good, man.
Well, this is a good headset. It's a $150 headset. And Blue Parrot.
Blue
X350.
Ferret?
Parrot, as in Polly want a cracker.
Yeah, okay. Too bad there's not a blue ferret out there. That's...
I was gonna say, it's not that good, because you couldn't hear if I said parrot or ferret.
Yeah.
But, it's pretty good. It's got a windsock on it, which helps a lot when I'm blowing air on me. And...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, I posted a link to 7B. So I'll do, recite the alphabet or whatever with this, and then I'll do the same thing on the phone. I'm curious now that I'm talking about it to see what the difference is going to be.
All right, say that one more time.
No, I'm just talking about recording some samples with this mic as compared to the cell phone with the 58 plugged into it, and just seeing how different it is, you know, because ultimately it's going to be on a computer being sent around to somebody that's going to download it probably and play it that way. Right.
And the codec will downgrade it too. And that was what Zal was talking with Kaham about, the codec, the actual compressing of video alters the image, and you have to include that in your assessment of what you're looking at.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth. I the FLAC seems to be one of the things that people like, is the compression if they're, you know, ripping CDs, and
yeah,
people kind of don't have a very good impression of MP3s. I feel like on some things that I'm familiar with, I can tell the difference if it's an MP3 or a WAV. Supposedly somewhere up in your neck of the woods, there's a MP3 studio where they do all this testing, and they have all these record producers and come do this blind test, and they don't ever give the results. And what I've read is that they said you'd be surprised, and the people that think they know the difference are wrong half the time. So I don't know how much difference it really makes, as long as it's not snap, crackling, and popping. And
of course, we have a whole generation of people, including myself now. We listen to audio on crappy smartphones and computers without sound, with built-in sound cards. When's the last time you ever asked or saw someone go buy a big stereo system. I know when I was a teenager, I saved up for a big stereo system with all the components. And we heard some pretty good sound out of those units. Now people are listening with $5 earphones. So what is the need for great quality sound?
Well, that is a good argument in that direction, although I would say that probably the better quality you have on the front end, the better it's going to be on the back end by the time it gets diluted and reduced down to the point where they're listening to it. You want to be starting with as good quality as you can. I think that makes sense to me. But yeah, I think you're right. People, they don't...
They can't detect good sound. They can't detect it because they're not using great receivers. They're not using great equipment anymore. They don't have subwoofers and... You should go on the street. I should do this with ask young people, what's a tweeter? What's a woofer? What's mid-range? They're going to say, are those dogs? Birds? You don't know. And that's all, that hasn't changed in audio engineering. All those are required for good sound.
Right. I agree. And I certainly notice it. And I love to listen to it. But you know what? I don't have the best hearing anymore. I had tinnitus for a while, but it's dissipated, thankfully. But I spent a lot of time playing in bands, so my hearing is compromised. And my wife has like tremendous hearing. She's got supernatural like bat. So when she watches TV and stuff, it's at a level that I can't really, I don't get much out of it. So I listen to it even when TV and stuff in headphones so I can hear it and then I'm not blasting her out. But our environment in our house is so, it's so quiet compared to like when I was in college, we had records playing and stuff blasting all the time. Like this, you know, like in the 80s and stuff, there were like, things were noisier back then. I think there were clubs everywhere that had live music and people, you know, I mean, I always used to wonder about too, when older people, my parents' generation would come complain about noise levels. And I was thinking, you guys used to go out and listen to 16-piece bands with saxophones and trumpets and drums and dance right in front of these guys. Don't tell me that was quieter than this. I think we're in a world where people, we don't have a really good frame of reference about what things really sound like. I mean, I'm totally on board with you about that.
Yeah.
It's just getting lower and lower as far as...
I've been to a couple concerts in the last 10 years, not many. Why do they blast the music so loud that you can't hear it in clubs? Why is it at a level where it's just a wall of noise? Is it to obscure lack of talent? Or can people at the back, do they need that kind of volume to hear it? I never understood that.
I would guess they want to get over the ambient noise floor. Glasses clinking and people talking and stuff. I would guess that's part of it, but I mean, it doesn't need to be that loud to get over that noise floor.
Oh, okay, but, noise floor. That's a good term.
I mean, if you look at a lot of cell phone videos of bands, a lot of times I see a lot of them where you can hear people talking close to the person with the phone enough to interfere with the level of the PA. So it's not that loud, but yeah, it is. It is uncomfortable. And then when you're in a band setup, everybody on stage has to keep up with the drummer. That's just the way physics of sound. The drum set is going to be loud and with no mics on it at all. The cymbals and, you know, when you're smacking drums. And if the drummer is a loud player, which a lot of them are, they're pretty enthusiastic and they kind of have a tendency to play maybe louder than you'd like. And everybody has to bring their stuff up to that level. Keep up with the drums. So that's kind of loud. But usually, with the loud drummer and people keeping up with that, if you get to, you know, 50 feet away from it, you're going to be okay. So, you know, it's like people that... But yeah, I've definitely played in bands where the club owners wanted it to be loud. And I don't know. Yeah, I spend a lot of time in loud environments. So it's definitely not good for the ears. I won't do it anymore. I put ear protection in now when I go places.
But like what do you use, just construction earbuds?
Yeah, you can just put foam in your, even napkins.
Okay.
Yeah, if you don't have anything, yeah, it's better than not having anything in there for sure. Yeah. I don't ever want to walk out of a place with my ears ringing again. That's just, you know.
That indicates damage, huh?
I've heard that, and I don't find it to be very comfortable. And I actually, and I don't play much live anymore with bands, and I did some band gigs at New Year's Eve and a couple of times right after that, and it was a little uncomfortable for me playing with the drummer. A lot of times the stages are small, so you can't really get away from the cymbals, and the cymbals just crash in your ear, and it's like, it's too much, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
But yeah, I know that when I first moved to Florida, and even places I spent in the South, and my story about this is I worked with a drummer. I don't even know if this guy finished high school. He never went to college. He only worked for cash, didn't sing, and he had a house he had paid cash for. He had a vet, a van, a Harley, and a boat when he was like 30. And he had never done anything but play in cover bands in little clubs and around the South. And he made a decent enough living to acquire that stuff. And now this is, you know, in the, like the mid to late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many, that's how people heard, like, Dan, you know, when you go out on a weekend, everybody went to see a band. There was bands down in Florida. There were bands everywhere, hundreds, not even more. It's all kind of gone for a lot of different reasons. But I guess that just, you know, it changes everybody's frame of reference about how they hear music and sound and everything. So I think a lot of what people think about sound is doesn't have a reference in the real world per se, you know?
Yeah. It's all through YouTube.
Or just like computer generated sounds that don't have a reference to anything that's like organic, like a trumpet or a violin. Or I mean, there's plenty of that still in places, but a lot of people don't hear those things directly. Like, I wonder how many people nowadays have actually stood in the same room with somebody playing a violin. You know, probably not many. Maybe school bands and places, but I bet that's probably not anywhere near as common as it was when we were growing up.
Do you have any recommendations for a headset that I can link through Amazon store for Ecologist audio chatters?
Headset? And what kind of headset? What do you mean?
Just to have good audio for audio chatters.
I have done zero research into that. And I think you probably have more. K-Ham, I don't know if she has a, somebody has a, like one of those all-in-one, like a gamer USB headset or something.
Yeah, I have one. I have one of those, and I have one where you have the mic and audio plugs to go on the computer as well.
Yeah, you probably know more about that than I do. I have not.
Yeah, well, I'll have to recommend everyone that they use one if they want to be sounding good on the audio chat.
And what would you recommend in that department?
Well, anything more than $30, probably.
That's the cutoff, huh?
Yeah, don't use something $30-$40. Don't go too cheap.
But you don't have a particular brand like Plantronics,
no.
Logitech isn't.
I don't think so. I'll put some links in this chat, maybe. Whatever Amazon's flogging for that amount. I'm sure brand names don't stay too consistent over the years with the profit motivation of trying to reduce costs year after year after year.
And so right now you're mobile. On a Bluetooth headset, going through your smartphone.
Yeah, I'm a little low usually. I can't get it any higher, but I'm still audible.
Oh, it's about as good as it's been. I think
this is relying on a lot of things to work to be good.
I couldn't get the Discord to work on my phone. I'm gonna have to figure out.
Oh.
I was trying to do that on the way. I was trying to call you, but I couldn't. I don't know. Maybe you just weren't picking up.
No, whatever. No, I wasn't picking up. No, I was busy. I didn't even hear it ring right away because I was on. Discord doesn't play well with the phone if you're on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Phone. I was just reading. There's no reason for the phone to be a separate channel, the audio. The only reason cell phone companies are keeping audio and data separate is they're too income streams. If they merge them, they're worried they're going to lose an income stream.
Yeah,
that's the only reason audio, their audio is not routed through data. They call it something else. They use circuit switching for the voice instead of packet switching for the data. So it's pretty interesting.
Doesn't it compromise the quality in the end on the way that the audio over the cell phone is processed as opposed to what we're doing here?
Well, yeah, I think we have a better fidelity with audio over data than just audio through their separate circuit. Yeah, this is really good. Sounds better, I think. That's someone said that's the only reason now. Now there's no good reason because we have high-speed data for the phone, so there's no good reason for them to keep the two separate other than the fact that it's two income streams, voice and data.
Hmm. Well, though, I guess at some point it's going to cross the line where it's going to be cheaper for them to merge them, even if they do have to restructure the billing. And then it'll all sound better. It'll probably make everything more consistent. But in any event, I'm going to have to move on my place here since I don't have the freedom of movement that you have. I have to get up from this
chair,
move about.
All right, Forrest, thank you. That's one reason I like to be mobile, because I can do things while I'm talking instead of sitting. So, yeah, thanks for sticking in, and thanks for all the info. I really appreciate it. And come back anytime to the audio chat.
Oh, yeah, let me, before I go. So I've noticed you've been posting recordings, and you know, are people just dropping in at random and they just happen to get lucky and somebody's there? Is that how that works?
Like, yeah. Well, on the main page of Fakeologist, it's easier to see who's there on the right side under the Discord window.
Oh, so it tells you who's in
who's hooked up to the voice channel and, yeah, who's logged in.
Is there any particular time of day have you noticed? Do you have any way to?
No, because everyone's everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
I don't really pay attention. Okay. I try and look around 5 o'clock for the Brits because that's 10 o'clock their time.
Okay. Right. Right.
I can't really. I always get confused with Australia and Abu Dhabi. I don't know what time it is there, but it's easy. It's easy to calculate London.
Right. That's just 5 hours ahead. Okay. Well, I'll have a look at that. That's pretty cool that I've still got to listen to. And there's recordings in there that I want to listen to. I haven't heard yet. It's a couple of new to me.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of good stuff. Yeah. A lot of good stuff. Yeah. Come by anytime. A lot of interesting voices.
Cool, man. We'll do it.
And I'll upgrade this parse value account just to avoid confusion. And anytime you put an @ in front of someone's Discord name, you should get an email, or they'll get an email, so you know that someone left you a message.
Oh, okay. And yeah. As far as the chat goes, you mean?
Yeah, if you put it in the chat.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
All right. Thanks so much.
Sure thing, Ab. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there goes Forrest Value. Forrest Value of Florida. He's an audio engineer. I hope you enjoyed that little tech talk. I know it's a little boring, but I wanted to get it down in case. Well, the whole purpose of audio chat is to help other people. So maybe other people are interested in doing some on-the-street recording. If you do it, it's always welcome here at the Fakeologist site. I challenge anyone to go get one of these recorders or just use your phone and just ask some questions. And that would make some pretty interesting material for the site. Everyone's got their phone, their smartphones. They have recorders, and, of course, you could film, too, if you're feeling really gutsy. But the audio is usually not terribly good when you video record. But I encourage it.
It's the material for us.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Hello, Ounce of Salt.
Bonjour, Fakeologist. Ça va?
How have you been?
Très bien, merci. Your sound is a bit weird, Tim.
Frank, have you been to the Mall of Canberra? Is it not good? Is it not? It's poor.
It's come okay now, but it was a bit wobbly before. Yes, I've been to Canberra. Yep, where they built a pyramid.
Oh, one moment.
Sorry, hold on a sec. I know why hold on a sec, Frankie. I got 800 things on the go right now.
That's a lot of things on the go. Someone might accuse you of exaggeration.
All right, how's that?
That's good, yeah, that's fine.
No, that's not right, hold on.
It's just not quite as resonant as you normally are.
Hold on, we're fixing it.
Fix a bit.
Yeah, it's glitchy.
Hold on a sec. We're getting there.
Okay.
All right. How's that?
Yeah, it seems okay. It's not.
No, it's still not there. Hold on.
It's not the same warmth that you have normally.
Okay. How's that?
Yes, that's molto bene.
Oh, God. It's like twisting your body into a pretzel trying to get the audio going on some of these smartphones.
Can you take a photo?
Yeah, I have to be a contortionist. Okay, let me ask that question again. Have you been to the occult capital called Canberra in Australia?
Yes, I have, and it really is like a pyramid. Yes, it looks exactly like a pyramid. Everything about the occult nature is, as far as I can work out, completely true.
Isn't the capital building a beehive, or am I thinking of somewhere else?
The capital building of New Zealand is a beehive.
Oh, that's where it is.
And I have to let me tell you a little story. So we went, I went with my children to New Zealand for a skiing holiday a long time ago now, in the early 2000s. And we were just hanging around the Parliament building that we got there in the evening. And a security guard saw us hanging around the building and said, oh, what are you guys doing here? He said, oh, we've just arrived from Australia on holiday. He said, oh, would you want to have a look at the building? We said, sure. So the guard of the New Zealand Parliament took us through the Parliament House of New Zealand. We got there on a Saturday night at about 5 p.m. Where did that happen?
Did you see anything good?
It was just a building. I wasn't of that kind of mindset back then to look for Masonic type stuff, but it was very, we still laugh about it.
Yeah, I was listening to Scott Onstott on
the fact that this guard just took us through. Now it would be, of course, that would be impossible. It was like visiting the local school hall. It's really funny. And then within a few months, all that had changed. There were armed security guards everywhere and metal detectors
Are you saying that was before 9/11?
How quickly
9/11?
It all changed.
You had that tour?
I've completely lost you, Ab.
Yeah, I know. Can you hear me now? 2212. 2212. My green light's going on.
It's probably time for me to talk about the man from Ironbark again, is it?
Oh, can you hear me? Well, I can hear you, but you can't hear me.
Audio check. Audio check.
I can hear you. Can you see my green light going on? It doesn't matter if you can hear me. I can hear you. I can hear you. All right, we're back. Frank is back. The connection is back. There's Frank.
Are you receiving over?
Yeah, and Napoleon. It's like Napoleon Wilson is always there watching. He's the guardian of fakeologists.
His arm on his left breast, hidden behind his coat.
Yeah, he's good. He does a lot of footnoting of the show.
Yeah. He might be your guardian angel, Tim.
I know. And, yeah, he's... can't understand Napoleon perfectly with his super thick accent. I guess that's a Manchester accent.
But it's an affectation anyway. You know that he's really sitting in Denver.
That's true. That's the voice software. They have to lighten the accent up. There must be a bar you can just scroll a little to the left.
To make it less thick, you think?
Yeah. There is actually. I'll turn it down to 11. There we go.
Now, yeah, Denny, I'm absolutely certain, Denny, that you can say the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain if you wish to.
The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. That's about as good as it gets.
How was that, Tim?
It's not bad. If he sang everything he said, like a lot of British singers, you can't hear the accent.
It's really interesting, that, isn't it? How and I notice that a lot at, you know, my favorite thing of karaoke. That when people sing, their voice is completely different.
Yeah, Roger Daltrey. He has a pretty thick accent of the Who.
Yeah,
you wouldn't even know he's British when he's screaming it out.
But just before you get back to your Australian Canberra thing, I was listening to Cilla Black the other day, Denny. Do you remember Cilla Black?
Oh, marvelous! Yes, a lot of laughs, Chuck. We're gonna have a lot of fun tonight.
And yet when she sings, she just sounds like the Queen. That's hilarious.
That's true. Do you know as well people with stutters, when they get a cold, lose a stutter a lot of the time?
Is that right?
Yep.
I've heard when they're having intense sex, they lose the stutter too.
Ooh.
It's going to be a whole new genre.
I'm getting raunchier, isn't it? As the shows get on, he's getting raunchier on everybody. We're going to end up like Benny Hill, you know, up.
That's right. It's a whole new genre of porn coming up.
Audio porn.
Yeah, audio.
Audio titillation.
Well, Frank, I know we were. I like Kay Ham. I don't like to speak about her in the third party when she's not here. But let's just get to this mirage, because.
Well, I did challenge her directly. I wasn't indirect about it, and she scarpered.
Well, she might have to go. Let's not take much out of that. She's on a lot. But Kay Ham is one of those people that I really want to believe and listen to and like when it comes to this topic. But there's something, nothing she is saying about the ball earth is compelling.
And nothing at all.
No, I'm just trying to believe her. But I don't believe, I'm just taking it all in. I don't have a firm position. But this upside down picture of Chicago is not compelling, because I, on a nice day, can always see Toronto from the other side of the lake, and it's never been upside down.
Never.
And I go through all kinds of weather.
Yep. Same here. And also Sal has already pointed out that picture is not even a picture you've taken from your phone. It's some sort of compressed image. It's all crazy. It's not convincing at all, and it doesn't appear that they're even trying to be convincing with it.
And after Zal and Kay went over the Robbie Parker CGI theory of Kay's, Zal was quite compelling, and just the topic of codex alone was enough for me to think that that's a good explanation for any problems. Just the conversion of video and the compressing and the... all of that and the green screening and just the logic of why would you create a sim when you could just get a bad actor and then send them away.
You're going to be like Dallas Goldberg soon.
No, that's never going to happen.
It's a bridge too far, is it?
Yeah, but I'm not up to date on my CGI sims. I don't watch all these awful movies with simulated CGI. I didn't realize that there was a really good CGI character that Zal brought up. I've never heard of the movie or the character, and I probably would. I guess I might have to go watch that movie just to watch what the latest and greatest CGI creation of humans is.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good plan. I do watch them occasionally. They're very stilted.
Yeah,
but they're obviously improving it.
But I listen to Globusters because those guys have so many things. There's such a long list of problems with the ball. that I can't focus on the upside down mirage nonsense. There's just so many other things to grab a hold of.
I just haven't seen it, right? I personally have never seen this upside down mirage thing. Yeah. And did you see that? Did anyone actually see that mirage, or was it just an image that they put there?
Well, they claim somebody sent it in. Somebody sent them the picture. That's their claim. Someone
sent them in a compressed picture. That seems, again, you know, even if I'm wrong, it's highly dubious, isn't it? There's no.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, there aren't a lot of days when I can get a really great picture of Toronto from across the lake. Because we have so much different weather. I don't live there. If I lived there, I would just leave the camera on. But I go there very often. Mm. And at least more than half the time, I can't see across because there's so many. We have so much different types of weather here. Cloudy. It's rainy. It's foggy. But when I do go and I do take my camera, I have film and I have one to upload yet, and I'm gonna do that. I got some pretty good shots. I got my child to take it because I couldn't keep my hand steady. When you zoom in with the P900, one little wiggle and it goes right all over the place. So it's really hard to stay steady, but it's with ultra zoom. Yeah. But anyway, I do.
One thing is I can say absolutely is when people go up a few hundred feet and say they see the curve of the earth.
Yeah.
I can absolutely uncontroversially assure anyone listening to this that when you learn to fly a plane and you go up to, say, 10,000 feet, the horizon is completely horizontal. It is completely at eye level, and you're taught to assume that. And one of the things my pilot instructor said to me when I was expecting the horizon to be lower, he said, "You bloody engineers are all the same. You have all these stupid assumptions that aren't true." And
oh, really?
Yeah, engineers are the worst possible student pilots with all their stuff in their heads.
But he probably wasn't even a flat earther. He probably doesn't even put two and two together with what he's saying.
He just completely doesn't put two and two together. Absolutely. It's just humorous. But it's exactly what I keep coming back to all the time.
All I was going to say is that, can you imagine how hard it would be to fly if that horizon dropped as you were going higher? Because 10,000 feet isn't even that high. You get to 30,000 and, you know, it's dropping significantly. And you're in a plane, you're meant to, you're going to be fighting the instruments, looking at your eye level, looking out the window,
Exactly. And not only that, but the instruments that you use to keep yourself straight and level, the gyroscopes, they should actually be flipping over as you travel around the curve. Now, the whole idea that they can keep you straight and level is based on the assumption that the Earth is flat. Mm-hmm. And
you're doing a lot of dipping.
And so what the story is that they say that built into these gyroscopes is this device which corrects for the curve as you travel along. Really?
What's it
so does
called?
That mean...
What is the device called?
Some compensator or something.
Is it a magicometer?
It somehow knows when it needs to do it, but it's really just comical. I love it. I absolutely love all the stuff. Anyway, as I said, I don't think, and I put the challenge to Kayham this morning in my morning, your afternoon, it must be. So when exactly is it that you apply the curve? She said, "Or when do you apply the ball?" I said, "I never apply the ball. And if anyone should apply the ball, it's me. I'm a mining engineer. We do surveys over the scale that you would have to apply the ball, but we never do."
Right.
That's all.
All industries seem to gloss over the lack of curve. They don't say anything about it. They don't draw any conclusions. They just say there's no compensation required.
I basically just say something like my pilot guy said to me, "All you engineers are the same. Just do what we've always done before. Stop worrying about all that stupid stuff. We know what works. Let's just do what works."
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have to have a position on the shape of the earth as a pilot. You don't have to have a position on that.
Yeah. All that the engineering professions know, all that the architectural professions know, all that the civil engineering professions know is most of the work we do is prescribed by law about how we go about it. Follow the law. Even to build a tall building, when you do the design calculations for the members that you use to, you know, for a beam or a column, etc., you can do the calculations and you end up with one set of pieces of steel to use. But they are completely different to what you're actually allowed to build because there are building codes, which they say they're factors of safety and so on. But you end up having a design which is several times more robust than what your engineering calculations would warrant. And that's true of practically every trade and profession. You know, we do all this science and we say science just works. But in the end, the regulations prescribe what you can do, and those regulations are based on practical experience, practical outcomes, but for just about everything, for gas, for water pipes, for, you know, it's based on, which is now hundreds of years of practical outcomes and safety investigations. There aren't, we don't use science or the specifics of gravity or gas laws or anything like that for any practical work.
Interesting. Let's switch gears. This is almost, I think the round earth, ball earth, flat earth is the debate anyway. The convincing is almost like, is there a God, isn't there a God? It seems to be a debate that almost always ends in a stalemate. It's almost,
no,
it's
debate.
Similar
to we've been to the moon. We've been to the moon. Right. We know it's round on the way back.
A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things.
It's like the abortion debate. When does life begin? That you cannot convince the other side to switch positions. It seems you have a position that you almost are instinctive about, and it's almost impossible to flip one over to the other side.
Okay, so that's interesting that you say that, because my childhood, I remember when my mother was at one stage thinking about having an abortion, that without having any great ideas about the goodness or badness of that, I just thought, oh, that just sounds like a completely terrible idea. And as I got older, I sort of intellectually came to accept that it was okay. But I think I can confirm your view that you never really change your position. You know, I've accepted it intellectually, but I don't think ever emotionally I've accepted it as okay. So I guess I'm confirming your idea.
Well, I can't believe your mother let you in on that information. That seems bizarre.
Oh, well, yeah, it may seem bizarre, but it's, I don't know whether she let me in or whether I overheard it. I don't, but one way or another, we did have that discussion. Because this was quite late in her childbearing years, so I was probably 17 at the time.
Wow, that's something else.
Well, it was for those days. No, it was in those days, but it's quite common these days for women, even older, to have children now, isn't it? It's the sort of the norm. Wow.
Can we know how it turned out now that you brought it up?
It all worked out fine, yeah.
Do you have a brother? Do you have a brother or sister?
I have a brother that's that much younger than me, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, she chose life. That's amazing. I think I fall on that side, but I'm not a woman. I know a woman has probably way different views. And men are not supposed to have an opinion on it either.
Which is kind of crazy, isn't it? We have been marginalized from perhaps the most important of debates. Unfairly, I think.
Yeah, it's the third rail. The third rail in politics, as we say in the subway business.
So tell me what you mean by the third rail.
Well, in the subway, there's two rails, one for each wheel on the axle, and then the third rail is where the subway garners its power, electricity.
Yep.
It's just a contact that drags along a electrical contact.
Right.
You don't want to touch the third rail. It's got too many volts.
Okay. Well, I am often contribute on Facebook, etc., my thoughts on abortion. I just think it's just horrific that there are so many of them. It really disturbs me personally.
Well, that's the saying, isn't it? What's the most dangerous place in America? It's in a black woman's womb.
Oh, and, no, careful. Jeez. I'm sure it's
I'd really enjoy it. I don't know. I've never looked into it. It's one of the most horrific things going. I never want to really look into it again. But even the business behind it. But nevertheless, I've heard that saying a number of times in the past.
I never heard that one, actually. But
I've never heard it either, but it's a very interesting idea. And the number of abortions in Australia, whenever they did take a record and they more or less stopped doing it, was in the early 80s, running at 84,000 per year in Australia. So easily the largest cause of death here, easily.
Wow.
And the reason I sort of got interested in that was when a university group in England came up with the conclusion that, well, if we're okay to terminate fetuses, then, you know, there's nothing different between that and terminating one-day-old children.
Who came up with that?
I think they're from Bristol University or something like that. So
they have a morality board. Is that who they are?
Yeah, that exactly. Yeah. A kind of a morality thing.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah. I've heard that.
Well, I don't want to get into it.
I know.
It's another endless debate, and it's endless.
Yeah,
it's really
I'm hoping it was you that brought it up and not me, so I can escape.
No, I brought it up, and it's quite fascinating because it only came up recently in my documentary viewing, because there was a pretty good documentary. I probably posted it on moreab.fakeologist.com because it's not fakeologist related, I don't think. Moreab.fakeologist.com for anyone who wants to follow some of the things I like to follow outside of fakeology. I think it was a documentary on the Down syndrome, the elimination of Down syndrome in Iceland and soon in England, Great Britain, UK, because of genetic, quote-unquote, genetic testing. And Down children have been quite successfully eliminated in Iceland, apparently. Mm. And that's through the eugenics program of very selective abortions. And it was a very good documentary because this woman had her own Down child, and she was just talking to Down's advocates and some Down's adults. And it was just, you can't watch that, I don't think, unless you don't have a heart, and see the problem with the selective elimination of certain imperfect people.
Mm.
And it was very touching. You should look it up. I can't remember the name of it, but it was very well done. And, from a fakeology point of view, I don't know if the woman is a well-known UK actress. So I don't know if she was acting this whole thing out, but it doesn't matter because the point is taken, at least by me. And it's just very interesting when she was interviewing NHS, National Health Service bureaucrats that were in charge of the program of genetic testing, and just the cold technocratic position they took on the whole program was just very chilling, to say the least. And worth a look if you can look up on my website and just scroll down. You just search for Downs.
And did you say this was Sweden and Iceland?
No, it was the UK and Iceland.
The UK and Iceland. You know what I was going to say? Yeah. The thing I've worked out with Iceland is they're sort of at the forefront of a lot of medical new tricks. Like brain injuries, what they do is they isolate the person so there's no activity going on around the person and let them mend themselves. I know it sounds crazy, but there's a lot of, this isolation treatment. There's a lot of that going on there, and that's very cold and callous as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I never heard of that. But Iceland is a very small country. I think they say there's only 250,000 people there, so there's a good chance that you might know way more people than in a normal country. It's just interesting. A lot of inbreeding, and it's just an interesting place. I'm definitely going to put Iceland on my list of places to visit.
Yeah, I'm very keen to go scuba diving there in the volcanic trenches.
Yeah, you'd be boiled like a lobster.
You would have thought so. I'm intrigued by the whole idea.
And this is another aside. I was listening to something. It might have been an audio chat. But somebody was telling me that lobsters, when you throw them in boiling water, don't fight back. And that very day, we were talking about that in my circle of friends. And I think it's quite the opposite. When you throw a lobster in boiling water, you have to put a very heavy object on the lid of the pot. Otherwise, they will knock it off and jump out. They very much do not want that. So I think, I don't know. I just threw that out there. I don't know where I heard it. Someone was telling that lobsters don't fight back, but no, they don't like that.
I don't know where you've done that. You've ripped my mind. I asked Zal if the lobsters jump the other night.
Oh, was that you? Okay, so you, yeah, they jump. They don't like that at all. And you have to put a very heavy weight on a pot because they will knock off the lid and get out.
Brilliant.
Well, I think I saw something a few years ago, and I'm, you know, I'm skeptical of this for sure, about, you know, how they actually freeze them before, you know, so they put them in a very cold environment to basically anesthetize them before put them in the this is some restaurants. I don't think it's true of Chinese restaurants in China, though.
Wouldn't they just keep them in fresh water or salt?
Yes, they do. No, they keep them alive because you don't want them
alive.
But what I was saying was that according to this particular guy, the humane thing is to more or less get them frozen so that they're insensate at the time that you then stick them into boiling water.
Yeah, that's enough to make you not want to eat meat. But I'm not a vegan, but. I do like lobster mostly, but it's too expensive around here. Or on the coast for that matter. It's expensive, period.
I don't think lobster is anywhere near as delicious as what they call Moreton Bay bugs that are a feature of Australian cuisine. They're delicious.
Yeah, okay. I got about 20 more minutes. Let's get back to the capitals, the pre-planned capitals, if you're interested. That they all seem to begin with, they all seem to end with the letter A. Canberra, Brasilia, and of course we have Astana. I just wondered if you what you thought of all that.
Well, I've seen the show by someone, I can't remember his name, where he talks about the geometry of all of these places.
Yeah, Scott Onstott.
And that's it, Scott Onstott. And
he's Canadian. Yay.
I didn't have any reason to question his thinking. I think it seems very clear that you know, Egyptology is in big is big in the world of making capitals. That certainly was. It's pretty clear in Washington. I haven't looked at all the Astana things, but that, again, it just seems to fit in with the same kind of thinking.
Have you heard
it?
Of Astana?
I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, and you're a learned individual, so I find it fascinating. So many people, almost nobody's heard of it. Amazing.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things that I get surprised at more or less every day now. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole breakup of the Soviet Union has led to, I'm thinking, a whole bunch of wonky stuff since that time. That has all happened, if you like, behind what was supposedly not an Iron Curtain anymore, but really we didn't have much of a view of it, did we?
Mm-hmm. No,
you know, everything that's, I mean, supposedly the walls come down and we know a lot more about Russia, et cetera, now, except that we don't.
We don't know
practically nothing. It's not advertised much. It's not that easy to get to those former Russian republics.
Well, you the know, main problem is the language barrier. The language is impossible to even understand if you don't speak it or you can't read it. That doesn't help.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on fakeologist.com.
I mean, for example, have you heard of the story of the Empire of Tartaria? Are you familiar with all that?
No.
So there is a group of historians that are saying that up until the arrival of Peter the Great in Russia, who was again a Venetian Jew as far as we can work out, that the empire that we call Russia was actually called Tartaria, and that's where the Tartars come from, and that it was a vast, massive, powerful empire. Is it true? I've got no idea. It's, you know, more work to be done, but these are the – how much of our history is just nonsense? Probably a huge amount.
Agreed.
And what we know about Astaria.
Astana.
Astana. Well, it's made to look like an episode of the Jetsons now, isn't it, by the look of it?
Oh, yeah. It's more futuristic than Future World and Disney World.
Mm. And if you say it backwards, it's got a ring like Anastasia. She was the princess who was lost from the Russian family that has lost a memory or didn't know her upbringing, Anastasia. And you say it backwards, similar to Astana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder why they put
they don't
an
miss
A at the
trick.
End of
same with Britannia, I reckon, Ab.
Yeah, but they put the A on Canberra, Brasilia. They're all... Is there anything physically, geography-wise, why Canberra is where it is? Is there a river?
Okay, so the assumption is that it's halfway between Melbourne and Sydney. Hmm. But I don't think it actually is halfway between Melbourne and Sydney. Hmm.
But is there anything geographic idea. About its location? Significant? Because, well... Other than the distance, is there a mountain or a river, or is it just literally carved out of the?
It's in the middle of a mountain chain, yes.
Yeah.
Or just off to the side of a mountain chain. It's actually quite a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
But Scott Onstott would be the go-to guy there. But
yeah,
again. You know, interesting that when you try and go to Parliament, you can't really get there during the sitting days much. And the thing I find always fascinating about Parliament is that the discussions that they're having, you know, which are usually or currently they're about gay marriage or the environment or something like that, have got nothing to do with the legislation that's being signed on any particular day, which is normally about things like, you know, what you can plant in your garden or... You know, crazy stuff. And we don't know where all this legislation comes from or anything about it. And it's just not the topic of whatever they're talking about in the Parliament. And I'm sure that'd be true in Canada as well.
Yeah, well, I think all the legislation, all the decisions in Canada are concentrated in what's called the Privy Council. I've said this before. Mm-hmm. They make all the decisions. They do all the press releases. And those are unelected officials that encircle the Prime Minister, who in our case is just a male model.
Yeah.
he really, he's as vacuous as they come, sadly. Because at least we used to put lawyers in, and so they always sounded smart, but this guy is just, I think he's got some royal jelly in him, and I could watch his dad, who I didn't really like back in the day, all day now. I just watch YouTubes of his dad, who was a smart ass at least, and said some witty things just to remind myself where this.
Well, you know that he was absolutely world famous. He was. You're talking about Pierre Trudeau, presumably.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the most famous politician in Australia, without doubt.
Really?
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if when people were asked who the Prime Minister was, they would have said Pierre Trudeau.
Isn't that something? I had no idea.
He was promoted relentlessly in Australian newspapers. He was the vision of, or the exemplar of the modern political candidate who understands all the issues and is, you know, friendly to gays and all that sort of stuff. Understands the environment.
I don't think we've seen anyone like him since, at least here. He was one of a kind, and he was universally despised by the English and the French, which meant he was probably very good. And if you're equally hated, then that means you're doing a good job, I think. So
you think he was a genuine guy, do you?
I don't know. I guess not. I think he was put there in the sense that I think
because
he was Jesuit trained.
Right, because the hero in Australia was a guy called Gough Whitlam. And he, after years and years of conservative rule, he came in as the friend of Labor or as the leader of the Labor Party. And he was only in office for less than 3 years. And in that time, the first thing he did was lower tariffs for the textile and footwear industry, so destroying the textile and footwear industry in Australia. That was his first bit of friendship towards the people that had voted for him. Then he allowed abortion, and that just started just untold death and misery. And And then he is obviously brought in free university education for everyone so we could all get turned into a bunch of complete idiots that couldn't understand how to fly a plane. It was just one non-stop agenda item after another that could only have been brought in really by someone who is perceived as a friend of Labor.
Interesting. The key word is perception.
And so I imagine that Pierre Trudeau was, I always imagined that Pierre Trudeau was another wolf in sheep's clothing. You seem to give a pretty good rap.
He invoked the War Measures Act in 1971. We had this, I'm pretty sure, fake crisis where a British diplomat was kidnapped and murdered, and he brought in the army to bring law and order and he invoked the War Measures Act where that allowed the army to patrol the civilian streets. His most famous quote, you can look it up, was when he was asked what he was going to do if the mayhem continued. And his famous quote was, just watch me. That's the most famous thing he ever said. You can look that up. It was quite a good interview. Anyway, I looked it up. There's the left, the guy on the left, so-called liberal, as we call them here, but.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have the most iron fist when it comes to law and order. It's not what you expect, but that's what you get. It's the inversion.
Yeah, and in Australia, the guys that have done the most damage to the economy by privatization were what they call Labor Party prime ministers, you know, the friends of the working man.
Yeah, exactly.
It was Bob Hawke that brought about that floated the Australian dollar, and it just caused untold misery, really, for everyone in Australia, and massively increased the money supply in Australia at the time and caused houses to inflate rapidly. All sorts of completely awful things for the men and women that lived here, because at the time before these measures were taken, Australia was a debt-free society. People were wealthy.
That's happened to all Western countries, though. That's happened everywhere. It's happened here, too.
Absolutely. In fact, I noticed the Canadian, my cousins that live in Vancouver, post exactly the same articles that I see in Australia about house prices in Vancouver going skyrocketing, Chinese buyers and all the usual stuff.
Well, whether it's really the Chinese influence is...
It can't be.
It's cheap money. It's free money.
It's got nothing to do with Chinese at all.
Yeah, well, they're
Chinese are the Jews, aren't they? Again, blame the Jews, blame the Chinese now.
It's just supply. Yeah. It's just the availability. You know, if you lower interest down.
Well, the Chinese are part of it. They're part of the equation. There's no doubt about it. But it's not the total picture. Yeah, it's the free money. If your money makes nothing in the bank, you have to put it somewhere where there's an increasing asset. That's all there is to it. If you have $1 million and the interest rate is less than 1%, you have to find another vehicle.
And then, of course, there'll be the obligatory newspaper articles about how the people of my generation have selfishly bought all these houses to, make it difficult for the younger people. It's all my fault,
A lot of your generation is buying another house for their own child. That's happening too.
Exactly.
So they have two houses.
Three, four, or five. I mean, in Australia, it became a national obsession. And then that's then fueled by a whole bunch of shows about how to buy a house and make more money on a kitchen renovation and a...
Yeah.
It's just an unending stream of nastiness that goes on that you cannot for one second imagine that there's a benign government that, you know, can't really understand why house prices are going up and why it's all such a mess.
There's always a cause and effect.
You
solve one problem, you create two more. That's all the cheap money has done. It's solved.
Well, I don't think you could argue that cheap money has solved anything.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It was supposed to increase business and all that. So it's, I don't think anyone really knows. And I'm not sure anyone really knows how the system is going to work and how, what the consequences are. I'm not sure anyone is that smart.
No, I agree with you.
You have to be an expert in human behavior.
But the net effect is a transfer of assets from, if you like, what were formerly quite well-to-do middle-class people in the Anglosphere to concentrate actual possession of goods and assets with the very wealthiest.
Like the opposite of cancer. You get a growth of cells, but in this case, it's a growth of wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I understand what they're trying to do in China. That's the same thing they did in America. They're just trying to take 1 billion peasants and make them consumers. It's a good idea if you want to expand your business. I understand, but the problem is when you give those peasants all the American jobs so they can make money and get off the farm and move into the city, then there's a whole ton of Americans with nothing to do. That could be a problem in the future.
But in reality, Ab, what is it that we should be doing anyway? Most of the actual work that we really need to have done, which is simply growing food and, you know, having a house to live in and so on, it's the actual amount of work that's required to be done is minimal these days.
Well, yeah, the rest we just make up and keep ourselves busy and entertained and whatnot, yeah.
That's all. It's just entirely...
Or we make up fake industries that employ thousands of people that do nothing.
Coffee, insurance industries. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Well, so much. Nuclear industry. Convinced that whole industry is fake.
Exactly.
And that goes right into uranium mining, too, your area.
Exactly. And in fact, I actually at one stage was about to list a company to a uranium exploration company. And so I got heavily involved in all that kind of ridiculous stuff. And it wasn't that long ago. We're talking about 2008.
Well, I guess I never brought that up. Is uranium, what is that rock? What is it really? Does it really radiate, or can you really?
Well, I've got one thing. This is it. Right. If radiation is true, by chance, you should walk down the beach once in your life and pick up a stone that burns you. But what I mean is that, so you're saying uranium, but uranium's all mined by the Queen and her different companies and stuff like that, and it's all tied in at the top. So even if someone come forward, you still couldn't tell.
They couldn't take the word for being true. They take inert uranium and bombard it with, is it protons or neutrons? And that makes it a radioactive isotope. That's what we're told. That's the official story.
Yeah, or you end up with plutonium and so on.
You enrich it by doing some alchemistic process.
Yeah, well, the original idea was that you used a sort of high-intensity magnetic field, and it went around in a circle, and the heavier parts of it moved to one side, you know, like an electromagnetic centrifuge. And then it all is just ludicrous. It's beyond ludicrous.
You were trying, then, Frank. You were really trying, man. That was good.
But what do you think?
No. By the way, I can tell you that I have used synchrotrons and cyclotrons and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Denny, I don't want to – I shouldn't make so
much. No, you've never bought me, Paul, but what I mean is at the end of it, you always say, and it's bollocks.
But it is bollocks.
What are they doing then? What are they mining uranium for? Are they actually looking for gold while they're doing it?
The one that I've had some experience with is a company, is BHP, and they've got a large mine at Olympic Dam, which is, you know, 4 hours north of Adelaide in Australia. That company largely produces copper. They say they're a uranium mine.
Okay, interesting. So they're real, because uranium has to be a cover story for something real, I'm guessing. Something real is happening.
Well, I don't think there are any just straight uranium companies at all anymore. I'll have to confirm that. But as far as I know, they're always doing something else. And it's an industry where there's always another takeover going on. You know, the company seems to get settled for a while, and then, oh, okay, well, another mining company has bought it out. You know, the mining industry, you know, if you want to look at conspiracies and so on, the mining industry in the world is a fantastic place to start, you know, establishing conspiracies.
Well, we had one of the biggest fake companies that had real losers in it, and that was called Briex in Canada.
Yeah, no, that was a very famous story in Australia. Very famous story in Australia. This is about the guy salting things, and was the guy genuine, and was he really murdered by the CIA, and helicopters over Papua New Guinea, and everything.
It was a giant fraud. And the people that really should have gone to jail were the investment advisors that told their investors everywhere that they checked the mine. So nobody actually ever checked the mine. They just, and that, that was the real fraud. Okay, well, you're going to tell someone to put $100,000 in a Briex. Did anyone from the firm go look at the mine and see if there's anything there? Nobody went.
Yeah.
So they just said there was a mine. You know, it's that is the fantastic part. All the little subplots of the story are irrelevant in my mind. And nobody went to jail here, I don't think. And forget the original liars, whoever they were.
Well, the perpetrators mysteriously were killed by the CIA, apparently. You know, all the kind of...
Yeah.
Where does all that come from?
That's just the story, and there's a bunch of actors probably. But who started the whole fraud is the real question. How high up? Who is the
And how much wealth did it wipe out? Just enormous sums.
And it got some a lot of real small people too. I don't think I put any money into it at the time, but I know people that lost lots of money, and that I don't know if they were able to sue the brokers to get some piece back, or it's just. But that was a giant. Giant fraud.
Yeah. So the latest one for me is, of course, the demand for iron ore in Australia, which from Australia to China, it goes up without fault every month, the demand, the amount of iron ore being shipped out of Australia. Of course, and BHP, who, again, I work for, they used to sell all of their iron ore on a contract price. There was never any spot market. Of course, a few years ago, BHP decided that they'd have a spot market for iron ore, and now the price is a third of what it was.
Well,
they have, BHP probably have 40% of the market for iron ore. They produce 40% of the iron ore worldwide, maybe even more.
Yeah.
If they said, okay, we want $150 for our iron ore, people would have to pay. You know, the whole idea that BHP needs to respond to a spot market is nuts.
Interesting. Listen, I got to leave you right now. I pulled into my driveway, but it was nice talking to you, Frank. I'll get back to you on the iron ore thing. I'll have to
When you get a chance, I mean, look at there are really only three major suppliers. So why there's an idea that there's a need for, you know, unfettered market competition, it's ludicrous.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Frank, and thank you, Napoleon. Take care, guys.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
I'm Insert Person. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.